So on this 23rd day of June 2011 in Flagstaff, Arizona, we're reading the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we'll be reading today from Chapter 8, entitled Attaining the Supreme. And we're going to read text 5, 6, and 7. They have short purports or commentary there, and then we can discuss a little bit.
Page number?
Page number is difficult. Maybe it's page 349? 349? Mm-hmm. Page 349. Okay, see if you can follow along, and I'll chant one phrase, and you can try to repeat. Antakale chamameva.
Antakale chamameva.
Smaran mukva kalevaram.
Smaran mukva kalevaram.
Yak priyati samadbhavam.
Yak priyati samadbhavam.
Yati nastyatra
sanshayah. Yati nastyatra sanshayah.
Translation. And whoever, at the end of his life, quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Purport. In this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is constantly Krishna conscious is also the purest of the pure. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. Therefore, one should constantly, incessantly chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya has advised that one be as tolerant as a tree to Rori Vasahishnuna. There may be so many impediments for a person who is chanting Hare Krishna. Nonetheless, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. Now we're going to read the next two verses. Just bear with me, they're short purports. They all form a unit. Yang yang vapi smarang bhavam.
Yam yam nam
smaram bhavam. Jajat kalevaram.
Tajajante kalevaram.
Tam tame vaiti konteya.
Tam tame vaiti konteya.
Sadatan bhava bhavitaha.
Sadatan bhava bhavitaha.
Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state one will attain without fail. Purport. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharat, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental or spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. One more verse and a small purport. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu.
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu.
Mamanus mara yudnyacha.
Mamanus mara yudnyacha.
Mayarpitamano buddhir.
Mayarpitamano buddhir.
Mame vaishyasya sangshayaha.
Mame vaishyasya sangshayaha.
Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without a doubt. Report. This instruction to Arjuna is very important for all men engaged in material activities. The Lord does not say that one should give up his prescribed duties or engagements. One can continue them and at the same time think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. This will free one from material contamination and engage the mind and intelligence in Krishna. By chanting Krishna's names, one will be transferred to the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, without a doubt. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmiratam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances to him and all members of the disciplic succession, or Sri Parampara. So, these three verses kind of encapsulate the essence of the message of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, sometimes we may think that this is kind of morbid. Keep talking about death and what's going on at the time of death. But the Bhagavad Gita is a book that's part of the Vedic corpus of knowledge. And it's known as the essence of all the Upanishads. The Upanishads themselves are essential writings within the Vedas that give philosophy. They describe what is matter, what is spirit, what is the Supreme Spirit. But they don't give as many detailed instructions on how to achieve the Supreme Spirit in the form of the Supreme Person as the Bhagavad Gita or another book that we read very often or daily, the Bhagavad Purana, which I could explain in a little bit. So this book, Bhagavad Gita, is part of a larger book called the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata was written by Srila Vyasadeva. And it contains many wonderful stories, many, many histories of great sages, of demons. It's built around this. The main theme of it is this war that took place for the succession between basically good and evil. Arjuna is on the side of good, meaning the side of dharma, kindness, devotion, saintliness. And Arjuna, at the beginning of this book, if you read the Bhagavad Gita, he's declining to fight in this battle. Now, you have to understand the context that the war was, they tried to avoid it as much as possible. Krishna was on the side of Arjuna and the Pandavas, his great brothers, and they tried to compromise as much, but there was no compromise on the other side. So the battle had to be fought, but at this critical moment, Arjuna is declining to do his duty. And so this whole Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna in order to induce Arjuna to perform his duty in Krishna consciousness. For the sake of the world. And this is part of it. And in the course of teaching this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna deals with many different subjects. Different kinds of yoga are explained. Now, yoga in general means a process by which the soul or the self connects with the supreme soul, the supreme self. This is the general definition of yoga. And that word connection, in Sanskrit, yoga means connection, the process of connection. Right now, we're disconnected. Meaning that we have forgotten that relationship. And in this situation, as explained at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, we are identifying ourselves with something that we are not, namely this material body. The self is eternal, is never born. The self is, you can think of it as a particle of consciousness. We ourselves are conscious beings. The body is animated by the presence of the self or the soul within the body, within the heart region. We have had different situations, different bodies in previous lives. The process of transmigration is central to understanding the Bhagavad Gita or Vedic philosophy. So what happened to them? We can't remember them now. And it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind, as Prabhupada explains here in the purport, accumulates our thoughts and our desires during each lifetime. And those thoughts and desires in toto, and there's so many, every day we're having so many impressions, they go to form, if you will, the next template for the next body. It may or may not be a human body. Whenever you see consciousness, even a little ant crawling across the floor, you know, running from your foot and looking for some sugar, there's consciousness there. The birds are conscious, the beasts are conscious, even the plants. I remember many years ago I read a book called The Secret Life of Plants. Do you remember reading it? I don't know. I knew in this area I'd find somebody who had read that book. A wonderful book. You know, if you come into the room, you have a plant growing, and you yell and scream at your plant, and you curse your plant out, that plant will wither up. You know, not that you should try it as an experiment. But that plant is sensitive. I have a plant that's growing in my apartment. It's not my apartment, it's where I live. But I also often have guests there who stay. But that plant has been living now there for about almost 20 years. And I just water it, I give a little plant food, a little sun, and a lot of chanting, and a lot of care. And the plant just flourishes. I have to kind of trim it off, you know, and it just keeps flourishing and flourishing. And they've done tests. If you play, you go out, you know, they put some speakers out in the fields and they play Mozart, you know, and some nice music. The plants thrive. They play heavy metal, not so much, you know. The plants are sensitive to different stimuli like that. So they're conscious, rudimentary, but still the consciousness is there. So the amazing thing, and this is a central part of Bhagavad Gita's teachings, is that all of us as souls, as spirit, are equal. We're all the same. But because of the what we call conditioning, the different minds or subtle body that we've cultivated over years, we inhabit, every one of us is unique here. And we are making our future as we speak. Every day, we determine our destiny by how we think and how we, the modes or the activities that we develop, the habits of thought and activity. And so that very science is explained here, that at the time of leaving the body, and leaving the body simply means, this is right in the second chapter, taking off an old coat. This body is not us. That's the first teaching. We are eternal. The body is obviously temporary. So like it's a machine. It's a very complex, wonderful machine. But it's no more than a machine. And like every machine, it eventually breaks down. There's no question of it. And when the body finally can't support the whole life process, the soul exits. And then we're not independent of what our destiny is. We've already made it. Now the template is already made by that time. And we will go in by the supervision of higher beings. You know, and there are higher beings, just like we're higher than the ants and the animals, you know, then we're also higher beings to us. And we are put into another womb, and we develop another term of life in this body, a different body, but physical body. So this process is meant to be stopped. The whole purpose of the Vedic philosophy is to give us a way to break out of this cycle, because this cycle inevitably means suffering. In this world, there are ups and downs, but the basic principle is one of suffering. All of us eventually have to face, you know, old age, disease, death. We're getting up there, right? I never thought it would happen to me, did you? I mean, I joined this movement when I was 25, which is kind of old for joining. You know, I was 25. And time is going just like that. Suddenly you're 63. What's going on, you know? And time gets faster and faster as you get older. It seems to get faster and faster. Maybe not notice that now, but for a 5-year-old, being 6 is like 20% increase, you know? But for a 60-year-old, being 61 is only a small percentage increase. And it's that percentage that means how fast you think time is going. So anyway, what happens? We know you get old, you get sick, you know, it becomes suffering. I used to work in a hospital. I saw it up, you know, close. This was before I joined, and it's a process none of us can avoid in this life. But why do it again and again and again? Wouldn't it be a wise idea, if it's possible, to at least investigate a science by which one can escape this process and be reinstated in one's natural condition, which is, in short, Satchidananda. This word Satchidananda is very significant. Krishna's body is described as Satchidananda, eternal, full of unlimited knowledge, and full of bliss. We are part and parcel of the Supreme. We are Spirit, the Supreme Spirit. Krishna is the Supreme Spirit. We are the part and parcel Spirit. So we have that nature. We are eternal, we are full of knowledge, and we're full of bliss in our constitutional position. But now I would dare say that none of us could claim that we're in that situation now. We're certainly not eternal in this body. There's so many things we don't know, we're full of ignorance, and there's so many sufferings we undergo. And even the pleasures that we find in this life are very temporary and they're very limited. By this is where our forebears, we call the cyclic succession, or a whole series of realized souls that are coming down and giving us this knowledge, come in. And what do they tell us from their own experience? How from moment to moment they're experiencing a pleasure much greater than anything we could experience with our senses. An example, because this is something we've all experienced to some degree, the chanting of Hare Krishna. Now, the chanting of Hare Krishna, this is why I like to read these verses, it's emphasized here in the purports, you notice that. So, we're all experiencing it, and there's some pleasure going on there. You know, there's some transcendental vibration we're getting. You know, it's not an ordinary sound vibration, we can sense that. Now, the great devotees who have purified their senses, who are realized, they describe the holy name, this Hare Krishna, in so many ways. I'll give you a sample. This devotee, Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, so many of our writings and teachings actually come from him. And he says, Tunde tandamani ting vatanote tundavali labdeye karna krodha kadamani katayate karnabude vyakspiha chetak prangana sangini vijayate savindriyanam kritim no jane janitaki adbiramitai krishneti vanadvayi. So that last phrase means the two syllables Krishna, just the same ones we're chanting, but he's appreciating it more than we can because of purified senses. We're also appreciating, but this is the ultimate appreciation. So he says, when I chant these, he says, I don't know, he asks the question, how much nectar have these two syllables Krishna produced? When I chant them in my mouth, I want to have millions of tongues and millions of mouths. Why just one? So much nectar is coming. When they enter the ears, I want to have millions of ears to hear this sound, Krishna. And when they enter the heart, and mind is completely fixed on that sound, then all the senses become inert and we completely dive into an ocean of ananda, or bliss. Now this experience is available to all of us. And it's something that is echoed by many of our teachers and writers. They're not lying, they're not making up a story. And the point about this kind of pleasure of Krishna consciousness is that it's not temporary. It's not dependent on the sensations. It's not dependent on the amount of serotonin, you know, that you can excrete between your neurons. You know, they analyze the pleasure center. You know, it's not like that. It's direct. It's a spiritual pleasure, and spirit is unconditionally different from matter. Now we are trying to express our uniqueness, our individuality, our likes and dislikes through the medium of the body. Through the medium of the senses. But it's unnatural. It's not what Srila Prabhupada would call our constitutional position. So back to the Bhagavad Gita. Now here he's giving this principle. In the first verse we read that at the time of death, if we can remember Krishna, then we'll go to Krishna. The first thing we learn from the Bhagavad Gita and the other books of knowledge is that we can only perceive a small bit of reality. Our senses are very limited. And I think we can relate to that. In this room right now, for instance, there's probably, how many? 400 or 500, you know, TV stations, you know, waves coming through. But we don't see them now. There's no TV tuned in. If we had the right tuner, we could receive those. But no one can deny that there's some aspect of that here. These waves are here, right? And everyone knows, you know, what they teach in fifth grade now, that we can only see a small bit of the electromagnetic spectrum, right? There's so many invisible ultraviolet rays and all these different things. But they're real. They were always real. But until they discovered them with the instruments, they didn't perceive them. Now we expand our sense of reality. So the same thing is true for the spiritual plane. These great devotees, Krishna himself, is telling us there is a world of spirit. There is a whole world. Just as we have this world, that is the real world. This is the reflection. This is explained in the 15th chapter. And the reason you can tell it's a reflection is because it's always changing and flickering. The reality is steady. If you're by a pool, a very clear pool of water, and it's calm, you can see yourself in it. You lean over the edge of the fence, and you see it. But if there's a disturbance, you throw a rock in there, then it becomes wavy and your image is distorted. So we're now within that pool, And everything is distorted and constantly changing. Nothing is steady. So that world in which Krishna is present, we're chanting his name. Some of you may have read about his pastimes that he performed on this earth thousands of years ago. These are all archetypal, the pastimes of love, of different relationships, friendship, being the loving child of a parent, lover, master and servant. All of these are personified by Krishna in perfection. And that's the original world upon which this is the model. So the cultivation of Krishna consciousness means entering that world through the process of what we call bhakti yoga or devotional service. Right now, we're serving our senses. Every one of us is serving. It's so natural we don't think of it. Because we're identifying with the body as the self, we're thinking that when I see something beautiful, materially beautiful, oh, I'm enjoying. But you're serving the demands of your eyes and your mind to see that. You remember, the self is not the body. When we eat something, it's not offered to Krishna ordinarily, we're serving our stomach. We have to do that. You see? The soul is serving these things. When we serve Krishna with the means of these senses, then we begin to become what we call Krishna conscious. And at the time of leaving this body, then that consciousness, if it's saturated with Krishna consciousness, will take us to the spiritual world. Will take us back home, back to Godhead. That's the purpose of this process. And then in text 6, he gives the general principle. Whatever is the nature of your thought, the predominant nature of your thoughts at the time of death, that will determine your next body. And therefore, he says, always think of me and fight. Now Arjuna's duty is fighting. We can substitute our own duties, our own activities. The idea is we can't stop our activities, but we have to add the process of Krishna consciousness. How to live in this world, sustain ourselves, and at the same time cultivate Krishna consciousness, or bhakti yoga. That's the science that is explained in the Bhagavad Gita here. And it's something that is tangible. You can experience it yourself. It's not something that's theoretical. I've been doing this process for 38 years, and I can honestly say I've never regretted a moment of it. I can see the arc of my lifetime. You can see it now quite clearly. And what did I really miss? All of these other experiences, when you boil them down, they're ephemeral. They're very temporary. Whatever you accumulate in this lifetime is ultimately taken away from you. Whether it's something material, or when it's some money, or some fame, or anything. You go away and leave that. Just as we left it last time. Whatever our last life was, assuming it was human life. Where is that life now? Where is that, those relationships, that bank balance, that fame, that whatever it was? It's all gone. We can't remember it. So by the same token, whatever we do in this time, lifetime, materially, will also be completely forgotten. Will come, but our Krishna consciousness will not be forgotten. Whatever we do in the realm of developing this spiritual consciousness stays with us. And we'll start it next time. If we do 5%, we'll start 6% next time. But why not do 100% this lifetime? Why not? Because after, the thing is, if you get reincarnated, it's a painful process. It's not something that is pleasant. We study, the books will explain, or you can see, lifetime. So this is a very great hopeful process. This is a Krishna consciousness is the greatest process for individual advancement, for social advancement, for the whole world. Because the world, there's simply people ignorant of the real self, struggling hard to grab more and more of the riches of this world. And just as one topic, you can make a whole list. Global warming or climate change. Let's call it climate change. I mean, is it really a mystery that's going on now, and it's because of the rampant, careless burning of fossil fuels to run this overly technological industrial society? People are still denying it, but it's obvious it's happening. But what does that do to? It's due to artificial artificially accumulating and things and running a society that's completely unnatural. Like, we're living simply here, you know, brahmachari life. I'm living simply so many years, you know. Yes, I have a car, you know, but I hardly drive it, actually. Now I'm driving it 1,000 miles, but that's just to come and see Alex and you guys. But basically, we could live so much simpler, you know, vegetarian, you know. In other words, tread lightly on the earth. That simplicity means that you don't develop so many attachments, so many entanglements with this world. But it doesn't mean become simple-minded. It means that you fill your life and your consciousness with inquiry into the absolute truth, understanding the science of Krishna consciousness, developing your spiritual side. And that's real civilization, not this craziness that we have here. You know. So on a social level, and you know, the chanting of the holy name, the congregational chanting, is the Yuga Dharma, means it's the special process designed for this age, by which we can become Krishna conscious and spread the auspiciousness to everybody. So, I've been going on for a while. If there's any discussion on these few points. The basic point is, we're not the body, we're spirit soul, we're a part and parcel of Krishna. We can discover that best through the chanting of the holy name. And that will be successful when we leave this body and we don't come back. Don't come back. There's no need to come back. Bhishma Dev.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice
class. Hare Krishna.
So we hear of so many different holy names. We hear, you know, Christ, we hear of Allah, we hear of Buddha. I was just curious that if you know in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada's emphasizing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So I was just curious if you could elaborate on
that. Every bona fide name of God is infused with the Shakti. And that Shakti means the power. That if it's vibrated, in especially with attention and care and faith, will have a purifying effect on the soul. There's no question about it. But there are many different forms of the Supreme for different purposes. Just as you must have introduced the idea of Nrisingadev. There's a picture of Nrisingadev. I don't know if Alex has talked to you about Nrisingadev.
Some, yes.
So this is a manifestation of Krishna, but you know, absolute fury at the demon who is tormenting his devotee. That's personified. So the name of Nrisinga. Nrisinga means man lion. There's a combination of man and lion. I won't tell the whole story, but there's a reason why he appeared in that particular form, for a particular purpose. So, just like the form of Krishna as Nrisingadev doesn't manifest all the potencies that Krishna manifests. Very beautiful, but not as, you know, all-encompassingly beautiful as Krishna, that beautiful threefold bending adolescent boy in Vrindavan, you know. Even Vishnu, with the four arms and the conch and the lotus and the other symbols, doesn't have the same kind of attractive power as Krishna has. So there's unlimited different varieties of these forms of God. They all have potencies. But just as Krishna is Bhagavan, he has the opulences, the all-attractive character of God in fullest degree. So the name Krishna also has the greatest potency. And we have, it's not just my opinion, we have the Upanishads. You remember I mentioned the Upanishads as these crown jewels of the philosophic part of the Vedas. So in the Upanishads, there's one Upanishad called the Kali Santarana Upanishad. Now Santarana means to complete deliverance. And so this Upanishad specifically helps us become delivered from the evils of this age. Kali Yuga is a difficult age for yoga practice and for spiritual life. But there's a very good compensating feature of this age. And that is that the holy name is more accessible. So this Kali Santana Upanishad, the Hare Krishna mantra is given. this particular mantra. It says, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Iti shodashakam nam nam, kali kalmasha nashanam, natak parataropaya sarva vedeshu drishyate. What that last phrase means is that these 16 names, there are 16 names here, kali kalmasha nashanam, destroys the evils of this Kali Yuga. In other words, it's the best way to counteract the debilitating characteristics of this age. And if you search through all the Vedic knowledge, and there's a lot of it, you will not find a better means than this chanting of this particular mantra. So there's another aspect too, is that part of the process of devotional service, of any yoga, is to follow in the footsteps of the souls who have already gone before. This is called the marga. Marga means a path. Like in the Bible it says, straight is the gate. It doesn't mean it's straight and not crooked, it means it's thin. You know, in other words, it's strict. You have to follow. And what better way of following than if you have a soul who's already been there and been through it and has succeeded. So we have, as I mentioned, we have a whole line of realized souls who have used this mantra. And beginning with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who emphasizes the chanting of this, not exclusively, there's so many other mantras, but predominantly the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. Both in kirtan, and some of you may be introduced to the japa chanting, meditative chanting. They go together. When you sing in congregation, you absorb your mind, and then you do it individually, you find it easier to chant, and vice versa. If you chant some rounds, we can show you, some of you haven't seen it yet, that will you'll appreciate the qualities of the holy name. Krishna will reciprocate. So all these names are potent, all of them can be chanted, but in practice, we find that this Hare Krishna mantra is most efficacious, most powerful for this age, and it's recommended. Hare Krishna. Any other questions, comments? Okay, we'll end with a little poem. It's always good to end with something sweet. So, many of you know some of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. And this little poem is based on a part of the Bhagavad Purana I mentioned that describes him entering into the forest idyllically in the fall season. It's very beautiful in Vrindavan at that time. And so I'll just share it with you. And Srila Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, this is a book that he wrote summarizing the 10th canto, summary study he calls it. He says that this is real transcendental meditation. And if one can always remember this beautiful scene, then you'll be in samadhi, real samadhi. So he says, visualize this scene. Vrindavans, rivers, lakes, and hills ring out with charming hums and trills as flocks of birds and maddened bees rejoice among the flowering trees. To those idyllic woods and glens repairs Govinda with his friends, Sri Rama and the cowherd boys, to taste the most exquisite joys. And as they walk along the way, absorbed in herding and in play, Sri Krishna, beauty absolute, begins to blow his mystic flute. With peacock plume upon his head and fragrant flower on each ear, he enters Braj's woods with tread sublime, a dancer without peer. His golden yellow raiment glows, his garland reaches to his knees, and from his lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with melodies. As Krishna thus begins his day with friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies the forest way with fine impressions of his feet. Samadhi culminates in this, to always see this scene of bliss within oneself and outside too. May Krishna give this boon to you. Gaur Premanandi.
Hari Hari.
So now we'll move on to the next part of the program, which is
a quick announcement here. Yeah,
quick announcement.
We're gonna stand up and have a kirtan, but I usually just speak